Welcome. For those of you who are new, welcome to Reality Church. For those of you who are watching online, thanks for clicking on this. I hope you go back to week one and watch the whole series, or maybe you've already done that. So we are on week two of a series that we are incredibly excited about because we think that it can really change our lives. And it's so incredible, the stories that God is telling through our church. I mean, we just saw that story with Jen Douglas. Man, how incredible is that? And not only that, but God is working in our church to just show us, you know what, when you partner with me, when you kind of inconvenience yourself, I'm going to meet that and good things can happen when you take a risk. Just this last couple of weeks, something amazing has happened in our church. You guys know that a little bit less than a year ago, we did a series called Limitless. And during the Limitless series, we talked about what was limiting us as a church. And we had basically three things that we kind of zeroed in on as a leadership team. Number one was we had this huge line of credit debt that we had as a church moving into this building to help us build out the building. It was good, but it was kind of hanging over our heads. It was really limiting us. It was about $188,000. We paid about $28,000. Down before the beginning of the year. So we had 160 left. And we thought, wouldn't it be cool if in this year we were able to pay off $160,000? That would be cool. That would be like God-sized. And so we also had this warehouse that we wanted to revamp and redo so that student ministry and children's ministry could use it and it would be more effective. And then we had this idea that people who are behind the poles, who cannot see me or the TV or sometimes the lyrics, might just want to see those things, you know? And so we said, well, there's that opportunity too. That one cost about $35,000 for the switchers and everything else, the cameras and everything that would be needed. Well, just a couple weeks back, God kind of showed up and because of a large gift that was given in partnering with all the other faithfulness and the generosity of this church, you guys faithfully giving to Limitless, we no longer have a line of credit at all. Yeah. let me tell you how big that is. That frees us up to do so much stuff that we were absolutely not going to be able to do. This is, I know it seems like a line on a piece of paper to you, but for me, it's families that are going to know Christ because of what happened. When it happened, I got to tell you, I was immediately moved to tears. And when we realized that that's what was going to happen, we were just incredibly, you know, just moved what God can do through generosity. And you know, we've already done the warehouse. And so here's a picture of what it would look like if we eventually got those screens where everybody in the room could actually see. Wouldn't that be a cool thing? I think, you know, even people in the cheap seats would be able to see the words and the scriptures. There's me in a Dallas Cowboys cap, and that's cool too. So, drop, Eagles, drop. Anyway, you guys know that song? Anyway, so, just amazing. I want us to thank God together because for the first time since our inception as a church, we are in November, because we've got a couple of other things we're paying off. We are in November going to be, for the first time since our inception, debt-free. Isn't that cool? Isn't that amazing? You know, when it comes to generosity, this is not the end point. You know, when we talk about generosity, we're not talking about what can we do to make this place better. We're actually talking about how can we better mobilize to make a difference in the world. And right now, there is a crisis in our world, and we can get, I mean, I've seen all sorts of political posts about this and opinions. Here's what I know. There are real families displaced right now from their homes, not with nothing. I saw some interviews from some workers. We have the worst refugee crisis in our world since World War II. Millions displaced, and many of them are families, and they've left with nothing. And so we want to give you an opportunity to not have your generosity terminate here, but to have your generosity make a difference globally, because I think God wants to bring his reality everywhere, right? And so we want to give you an opportunity. You can go to our website and go to Give tab, and there's a Europe refugee crisis there, and we want to give to an organization that is bringing the gospel and helping families. And Samaritan's Purse is doing that. We're a big fan of that organization. They run their stuff really well. And so if you want to give to that, you can go onto our website and you can say, I want to help, and give this week. And you can give today. You can give this next week. And then we're going to announce what our church did, what we did to help these refugees. And I hope you, and even if it's a little bit, you know, all of that partners up with all the other stuff that people are doing across the planet. And I just don't think there's any such thing as a small amount here, if it's $5 or whatever, $10. So let's do that together. Our generosity doesn't need to terminate right here. It's not all about us. It's about what does God want to do in the world. Well, during this series, we've made a few, even in week one, we made a few startling discoveries, I think. Number one, the biggest discovery, startling discovery, was being a sinner doesn't disqualify you from following Jesus. Did you know that? In fact, this is a prerequisite. You have to be a sinner to follow Jesus. That's like a necessity because everybody is. Every single one of Jesus's followers were sinners. In fact, it was so obvious that he had sinners around him that the good people had a hard time wrapping their mind around this concept. And they said, well, we can't follow you. You're hanging out with the worst of the worst. We can't hang out with you because we're kind of too good for them. So you have to realize, number one, that you're a sinner. That's a prerequisite. Number two, being an unbeliever doesn't disqualify you from following Jesus. Being an unbeliever, you have to remember, guys, that none of Jesus's early followers believed that he was divine. None of them believed in him in that regard. None of them said, you're the Son of God. All of them who were following him were unbelievers when it came to that. And so even if you're here and you're skeptic and you're a doubter and you're like, I don't even know that I buy that Jesus was God. Okay, you can still follow. You can still take a next step. Because none of his earliest followers got that. They thought maybe, okay, he's a good teacher. We've heard that. He's a good teacher. He's performed some miracles. He fed 5,000 people. Who wouldn't follow that guy? So if you're a skeptic, you can still take a step and follow him. And we also discovered, we learned that the invitation to follow is an invitation to relationship, not religion. And here's why a lot of you guys have dropped out of church, or you're just coming back, or maybe you're thinking about dropping out of church. Because you feel like it's all about religion. And religion has a very particular message. It says this, it says, change and you can join us. You know, get your life together. You know, when you come in here, you better have it together. If somebody asks you how you're doing outside these doors, you better say blessed, or we don't want you here, you know? So change. And then you can come join us. We'll welcome you in. But the message of Jesus is completely different from that. Jesus' message is, join us and you'll change. Join us and you'll change. You'll be different. You have been invited into this relationship where you don't have to get your life together. I hope you know that. We consider ourselves an entry-level church, and what we mean by that is anybody can walk in these doors and get the love and acceptance and kindness that God gives them. And Paul says in the book of Romans that it's not the fear of God and it's not this list of rules and regulations and this ladder of success that changes us. It's actually God's kindness that remakes us from the inside out. It's God's kindness that leads us to repentance or turning away from the old junk and turning to some new stuff that's good. So those are some of our discoveries. And you and I and everybody have been invited to follow Jesus. Every type of person in the world has been invited to follow Jesus, even if that means just following a part of his teaching. Right now, you're skeptical. Okay, open up the New Testament. Open up the first four books of the New Testament, the accounts of Jesus' life. Pick out a few verses and say, hey man, what if that's true? What if that, I'm gonna live that as if it were true. Try it out. Follow. Because in the first century, the gang that hung out with Jesus was a mix of all sorts of different people. Doubters, tax collectors, business people, zealots who were trying to throw off the government, men, women, rich, not so rich, respectable, not so respectable, all kinds of people, blue collar, white collar, all kinds of people were following Jesus. So the question is not, you know, how far have I gone? Not how committed am I? It's this, am I following? Not whether I believe or disbelieve, whether I'm a Christian or not a Christian, am I following? Am I willing to just take a little step here? Because today we're going to talk about a story from the life of Jesus that's actually told two times in the Gospels. You know, we got four accounts of the life of Christ, and they told things from slightly different perspectives. So we're going to look at this from two different perspectives. But this story is so cool because it actually illustrates four stages that you and I go through when it comes to following Jesus. Every aspect of what it means to follow Jesus is actually in this really cool story. First, I'm going to read the crazy version, the one that I kind of grew up on and the one that I would see in Easter plays and things like that, that just kind of seems a little bit nuts. And then we're going to go to a different version. We're going to look at Matthew's version of this story, and then we're going to go into Luke's. So first, Matthew 4, starting in verse 18. You can pull that up and get ready for this. Buckle your seatbelts for this one. So one day, as Jesus was walking along the shore of the Sea of Galilee, okay, he's on the Sea of Galilee, and he saw two brothers, Simon, also called Peter, and Andrew, throwing a net into the water. Why were they doing that? Well, because they fished for a living. So then Jesus called out to them. He said, hey, come follow me, and I will show you how to fish for people. Doesn't that sound a little strange to you? Doesn't it sound a little bit weird? You're going to throw nets and catch people with me. And they left their nets at once and followed him. What? So they were just doing their job, right? This is like Jesus walking into your job, and you're like doing some word processing or Excel spreadsheet or something, and he just kind of says, hey, drop what you're doing and follow me. And you're like, hey, boss, the guy in the sandals said, come, so I'm going with him. Good luck storming the castle. And you just leave with him, and you just walk away. That's crazy. It sounds nuts to me, but it gets worse. And a little farther up the shore, he's continuing to walk, and I guess Peter is just like following along. I don't know how he got Peter to follow him. He's like, you're fishing for fish, but now you're going to fish for people. It's like he would have some sort of Jedi mind thing on him. These are not the fish you're looking for. And Peter just goes, all right, I'm following. A little farther up the shore, he saw two other brothers, James and John. They're in a boat with their dad Zebedee, real name, and sitting in a boat with their father Zebedee, repairing their nets. So Jesus is on the shore, and he calls out. He says, hey, come on too. And they immediately followed him, leaving the boat and their father. It's like, see you, pops. Tell mom we love her. You know, the guy in the robe, he just said, come, so we're going. Who has faith like that? Who has that kind of faith? And it doesn't even look like faith, does it? It looks like irresponsible behavior is what it looks like. But you've heard that, and I've heard that in sermons. And I mean, that's a great story. But I've heard it preached to me when I was growing up. You need to get all in. It's do or die. He's either Lord of all or he's not Lord at all. And I'm like, wow, man, I'm a sophomore in high school. I guess we're going to go with not at all. Because what? Do I get a finish? Do I get a diploma? I don't know what it means to give him my everything. I don't know what it means to surrender all to him right now. I don't even know that I've got enough information to make that decision. So I'll just go with not at all, because that's sort of, at the end, demotivational for me. It's do or die. It's all in. If you're not willing to give Jesus everything, he don't want nothing. It's like, really? Is that true? I was one time a little puffy, and I lived in Lufkin, Texas. I weighed about 220 pounds, and I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I want to get in shape. My dad had quadruple bypass surgery, and I want to get in shape. So I went to Live Well. This is actually an interior shot of the gym that I first started trying to get in shape in. And I hopped on these elliptical machines. And it was cool because they had the news there, like CNN or Fox, or I don't think MSNBC was on at the time. But anyway, I would just do my little elliptical, and I would go fast. I would sweat, and afterwards I would weigh myself. And it would be like the same weight before as before. But the thing was, I was moving. I was taking a little baby step until the operator of the gym at LiveWell came up to me, and he said, you know what, you're not really doing any good. By the way, I was getting up at 5:30 because I wanted to do it before I went to work. 5:30, showing up there about 5:45, working out and going to work. And he said, you're really not doing any good. If you really want to get serious about this, you need to go over to those stair machines and climb those things for about 30 minutes. And it was the most demotivational moment of my life. And because of that conversation, I don't want to blame him, but yeah, sort of. I completely quit going. Have you ever had a moment like that where you thought you were taking a little baby step? Somebody came along and said, you're not doing it fast enough. You're not doing it. It's all or nothing. And it was nothing then. Okay, fine. It's nothing. And maybe you felt that way in your own spiritual walk where somebody said, you know what? You've been coming to church long enough. You need to have this and this and this lined up now. And you're like, that's not motivational for me. I'm going to throw up my hands and just say, if that's it, I can't do it right now. And you quit. And that's what I did. I quit. When the price is higher than you think you can pay, you walk away. You don't follow. Well, good news, guys. That is not how following Jesus begins. There's way more to this story than this crazy narrative. See, Matthew wrote his gospel to other fellow Jews who had big faith in a big God who didn't have any trouble with this story at all, made perfect sense to them. But Luke also wrote this story. And you know who Luke wrote to? He wrote to Gentiles. Do you know who Gentiles are? That's you and me. People with like this kind of faith who need a little more information before we decide to drop our nets and follow Jesus. And so Luke, at the beginning of his gospel, says, hey guys, I interviewed people. I investigated everything. I asked people, and this is basically what went down. So Luke tells the story starting in chapter 5. Verse 1. One day, this is the way he tells it, one day as Jesus was preaching on the shore of the Sea of Galilee. Oh, thank you for mentioning that, Luke. So he was standing there, and he was delivering a message. People were listening to him. He was preaching a sermon. That's what he was doing. He was doing some teaching. And great crowds pressed in on him to do what? To listen to the word of God. And that's a very important detail because faith doesn't begin as just an all-in, blind leap of faith. No, it doesn't. Faith begins with information. Jesus' feet were wet because the crowd was pressing in on him, and he's preaching. He's giving them the truth. He's giving them information. There he is on the Sea of Galilee, and there's a picture of the Sea of Galilee. This is where Jesus did most of his ministry. It's weird because it's just this little part of what was then Judah and or greater Israel, and he's like ministering in this small part, but it impacted the whole world. You can actually rent boats and go to the Sea of Galilee, which is a very deep body of water, and you can go around to those spots, and you can kind of check that out. They run those boats. But there was Jesus on the Sea of Galilee. Crowds were pressing in, and what was he doing? He was giving them information. They were listening to him. They were maybe getting some blanks filled in by what he was saying. Because it's very important, following begins with information. Following always begins with information. In fact, if you're a part of a church that just tells you, hey man, don't ask questions, just believe. You just need to believe. Stop asking so many questions. That just proves that you don't have faith. You know what you need to do if you're in an organization or a nonprofit or a church or a ministry that tells you not to ask questions and just believe? You need to do what that scary voice in the scary movies tells you to do. Get out of that situation, all right? You need to run away from them because you're following the wrong people. Because following begins every single time. Following begins with information. Following doesn't start with believing. Perhaps instead it starts with asking. The disciples were always asking Jesus all sorts of questions. So there you have it. He's teaching. And he notices, because the crowd is rushing in on him, he notices two boats that are at the water's edge, for the fishermen had left them there and they were washing their nets. What they would do is they would fish at night, and they had these big nets. They would throw out the nets, and they would fish at night because the water would cool down deep, and they would go up to the surface to get a little warmer. And so, and so they would throw out the nets, and then all night long, they would fish. In the morning, they would get the nets out of the water, they would hang them on these poles, and they would clean off the seaweed and everything else that was caught up in their old tires and beer cans and sunglasses, and they would get it out of the nets, and they would dry them right there. So these boats were there. Jesus sees the boats, and he asks a question. He steps into one of the boats, and he asks Simon, that's Peter, its owner, to push it out onto the water. So he sat in the boat, and he taught the crowds from there. So he's inconvenient. He said to Peter, hey, could I inconvenience you? Now, this was a big problem, I think, for Peter, because he'd been fishing all night, and I'm sure he was just about through washing his nets and drying them out, about to roll them up and go home and do what? What do you think? If he was fishing all night, he was about to go to sleep, right? So then it's like Jesus says, could I inconvenience you for a little bit? Could you push out the boat and just sit there and while I preach? I'm sure Peter was like, yes, awesome. This is what I want to do. Maybe you felt that way when you came to church today. I don't know. It's like, yeah, sure, Mom, I'll go with you. But there was Peter. He was working on his nets and Jesus was teaching. He was working on his nets, but he was overhearing Jesus. He was listening to Jesus as Jesus taught. He just kept on teaching and preaching, and I don't know what he said, but whatever he said was making a difference in Peter. Like, Peter was listening to this and catching this information. Peter is working and listening, getting some questions answered about who is this guy over here? And so he taught the crowds. He pushed out from the shore, and he was teaching the crowds. See, faith is built around content. Faith is built. There is no blind leap of faith. Christianity is not a blind leap of faith. Christianity is an informed faith. It stands up to scrutiny. You need to ask questions. You need to ask people who are okay with you doubting and okay with you asking questions, because we are making some pretty astounding claims. God became a person, died, and rose again. Okay, that's kind of crazy until you know that it's true. So we're making some astounding claims here. Ask good questions. And so Peter was getting some questions answered here. And when Jesus had finished speaking, he said to Simon, now what do you think he said to Simon? Did he say what I say to Amy after I preach? Hey, pretty good sermon, huh? What do you think? I don't think he said that. He could have said, all right, you heard me preach. Now give it all to me. Leave your nets and follow me right now. I'm either Lord of all or I'm not Lord at all. But he didn't. He didn't. You know what he said? He said, hey, Simon, now go out where it's deeper and let down your nets to catch some fish. So he asked him to do something pretty comfortable for him, something that Peter had done 1,000 times. But he was saying, you know what? Could you do it slightly? Could you tweak it? Could you tweak it for me? Let's do it slightly differently. You fish all night. You see, they would fish at night because the fish would come to the surface. It was easy to catch them. But in the middle of the day, the fish would go deep, and they weren't easy to catch. So he's asking me, he's saying, look, will you go fishing with me? It's something comfortable for you, but let's do it a little bit differently. He's asking him to take a baby step. Instead of abandon your family business and follow me, let's go fishing. Same thing he did with Matthew. Last week, when we talked about Matthew, he said, Matthew, follow me. And Matthew says, sure, where are we going? And Jesus says, your house. Okay, well, that's comfortable. So he asked Peter to take a step of faith, a baby step of faith. Do what you normally do, but do it my way. Now go out where it's deeper, let down the nets, and let's get some fish. Two problems with that. Number one, they had just cleaned their nets. How do you like that? Do you like it when you've just finished a project and somebody comes in and wants to mess it up again? That's like me at about 11:30 at night when the kitchen has been cleaned up and everything's been put away and it's closed. I never think it's closed, but sometimes my wife says it's closed. And it's all clean, and I say, you know what I feel like? I feel like a snack. That's not good. I shouldn't say that sort of thing. And Peter and all these guys had finished their project of cleaning their nets. He says, hey, let's go fishing. Let's go get these nets dirty again. And we'll have to do the whole thing over again. So he's asking him, this is more than an inconvenience. He's saying, will you trust in me? This is actually what's really at stake here is, can Peter trust Jesus? Because they had just cleaned their nets. There was another problem. I don't know if you noticed this, Jesus, but there's crowds around here, and they know I'm a professional fisherman. And if they see me putting out, the nets in the middle of the day, that's embarrassing. You just don't do that. That's not what we do. So that's embarrassing, Jesus. So he says this to him. He says, look, master, that's just a term of respect. It's not a big term of respect. It's sort of like mister. Master, Simon replied, we worked hard all last night, and we didn't catch a thing. We didn't catch anything. We fish at night. There's a crowd here, and you're a carpenter. You don't know about fishing. I know about fishing. So don't, please. But Jesus is saying, will you trust me in this little small thing? Will you take a small risk to see maybe there's more to me than you imagined? Maybe I'm more than just a good teacher. So Peter is deciding, can I trust him? I've listened to him. I know a lot about him. But can I trust him? So he says this. He says, but if you say so, if you say so, not because I think this is going to work, not because I think it's a cool idea, not because I really want to clean my nets twice today, not because I think we're going to catch a lot of fish. No, just because you said so. I hung out with you enough. I've listened to you for about 3 hours now. I trust you just enough. Now, I wouldn't do this for everybody. I wouldn't do this for anybody. But because you say so, okay, let's do it. Let's do it. I'll let the nets down again. Because I've got this sneaking suspicion. I don't know, the way you talk, the way you carry yourself, there's like something there. I'm going to test it out. I'm going to try this. So he lets down the nets, not because he thinks it makes sense. That's important, guys. Not because he thinks that everybody's going to think, oh, what a smart thing to do. No, he let his reputation ride, and he invested his time. What he didn't know and what he couldn't have known was what hung in the balance. What was at stake here? Wouldn't it have been cool? Because Peter became, we wouldn't even know his name except for he went fishing with Jesus. Wouldn't it be cool if Jesus had pulled him over to the side and somehow shown him what was at stake? It's like somehow a screen just appeared, and he says, Peter, here's the deal, okay? Look at this. Well, what's that, Jesus? That's your tomb. And they call it St. Peter's Basilica. Look at this thing. Look at it from the front. This is what it looks like. Peter, the finest craftsman, designed this thing. They spent 118 years on this thing. And you know who it's named after, Peter? It's named after you, St. Peter. Saint? Yeah, you're a saint. And they're going to build this whole thing. Check out the interior. Can you get a sense of the scale on this thing, Peter? Thousands of people are going to come to see this thing, and you're going to be buried there, and people are going to go, well, I can't believe it. We're here where St. Peter is buried. Named after you, St. Peter. Will you take me fishing? And Peter's like, yeah, you can have the boat. Are you kidding me? Is this true? Yeah, that's true. That's what's at stake. And it wasn't just St. Peter, of course. It wasn't just his name at stake. It's this whole thing. The gospel was going to go out because that hung in the balance. That was at stake at that moment, and Peter couldn't have known it. But he did let down his nets. And this time. See, they had let down their nets a lot that night, a lot of times. But this time, see, they had done it without God asking them to do it. They had done it without Jesus being in the boat. They had done it without Jesus' instruction. They had done it so many times. How many things in your life have you done so many times you've never been able to have like real success at it? Quit that addiction. Change that relationship. Man, I've done it this time and this time and this time and this time. But what if God is asking you this time to tweak it? What you've done 1,000 times, do it a little differently. And this time, their nets were so full of fish, they began to tear. I wonder what your this time is. I wonder what area of life God is nudging you in. You've tried it and tried it and tried it, and now you've kind of given up. Maybe somebody told you you're not doing enough. You need to go over to the stair machine. It's all or nothing. And you're like, you're trying to give up. But this time, their nets were so full of fish, they began to tear. A shout for help brought their partners from the other boat. And soon both boats were filled so much. And these fishing boats that they had in the first century, they had high sides. I mean, they didn't just float on the thing. They had a pretty high wall, and they were about to sink. They were full of fish. They were about to sink. That's an enormous amount of fish. And when Simon Peter realized what had happened, what do you think he did? He said, all right, woo! I'm retiring. We don't have to fish anymore forever. Or, Dad, we can take the month off. This is really incredible. No, that's not what he did at all. Instead, he did this. He fell to his knees before Jesus and he said, "Oh Lord." He didn't say, "Oh Master" now. Master had become Lord. He had an accurate view of who he was dealing with. "Oh Lord, please leave me. I'm too much of a sinner to be around you." At that moment, Peter had a really accurate view of who Jesus was and a really accurate view of who he was. That's where faith begins. When we realize who we're dealing with and who we are in relation to them, it wasn't about fish anymore for Peter. He had a dream probably of building a big fish business, but when Jesus comes on the scene, he makes that dream seem so small, and Peter says, "Go away. I'm not even worthy to be around you." He recognized him. His little baby step of faith intersected with Jesus' faithfulness. And something about Peter changed. Something inside of him changed. At that moment, we're kind of dealing with a different Peter, and he started a relationship with Jesus because he was awestruck by the number of fish they had caught, as were the others who were with him, Peter, James, and John, and Zebedee. His partners, James and John, the sons of Zebedee, were also amazed. So they were just like, they were almost scared because who can do this sort of thing? So Jesus replied to Simon, "Don't be afraid." Why? Because they were scared. From now on, and why does he say from now on? This is good news. Because no matter where you find yourself at any of these stages, God does have a plan for you. I've got something that I want you to do in the future. You're not done. You're not a finished product. You're not static. You're not the status quo. From now on, meaning I've got something else for you. Isn't that good news? It's not over. From now on, I've got plans for you. By the way, plans that I couldn't tell you up until now. I couldn't, until you took that little baby step of faith, you were never going to know. You never knew what hung in the balance. You would have lived your life not knowing what could have happened. You would have lived your life looking back and you would have regretted. But from now on, you've been fishing for fish, but from now on, you'll be fishing for people. Now it makes sense for me. Now it makes sense. A whole new reality is open to you, Peter. A whole new reality is open to you, James and John, that wasn't open before. And it wasn't based on what you believed. It wasn't based on who you thought I was. It was based on what you did. You took an action. You followed me. You took a little baby step of faith. You'll be fishing for people. And as soon as they landed, now this makes sense to me now, they left everything and followed Jesus. So there you have it. At that point, we're all in. It doesn't matter anymore. Now we see clearly who you are and who we are. We're going to follow you. So from this, we get basically four stages that you and I go through when we're trying to follow Jesus. Number one is, look, the sit and listen stage. And that's maybe where you're at right now. So your next step from this would just be to come back next week and listen. Listen to what maybe Jesus is teaching you. Maybe somebody gave you a book on Christianity. You should read it. Sit and listen. Get some more information. Get some questions answered. Ask some questions. Email somebody. You know, start listening to Jesus and say, "Who are you? What can I learn from you?" Because it always begins with content. It always begins with information. Sit still enough, long enough to learn from Jesus. So that's stage one. And maybe it's you and you're just going to be here next week. And that's your next step and that's good. And number two is maybe you're the lone in the boat stage where Jesus says, "Could I inconvenience you for a little bit? I know this is going to be maybe a bother, but could I inconvenience you? Could I ask you to do something for me?" Maybe that means for you to download the New Testament on your iPhone or buy a copy of the New Testament or a Bible and read it. Read through the New Testament. Join a life group. We talk about life groups here all the time. But maybe you need to go to your life group and say, "Hey guys, I don't want to be asked any more questions. I'm the one asking the questions. I want to get some things down. And can you guys help me?" You go and you take that little step. And you say, "I'm going to get some questions answered here." This is an inconvenience going to life group. It's an inconvenience, you might say, to read the New Testament. Yeah, it is. But that's the next step. Maybe you need to learn how to pray and just pick out a time during the day where I'm going to pray. I'm going to talk to God. I'm going to listen to God. So it's the lone in the boat stage. And then there's the take him fishing. Maybe you've gotten here. Take him fishing. And this is where it gets really exciting because cool things happen at the take him fish. This is where God is saying, I know you've done this 1,000 times and you've done it the same way. Your results aren't that great. Would you trust me to do this thing that you've done 1,000 times, tweak it, and then you've done it your way over and over again? Would you do it my way? And usually when God is asking you to go fishing with him and he's asking you to make a little bit of a change, it's usually in one of three areas. Either relationally, how are you dealing with people in your life? Professionally, what are you doing on your job? Or financially, how are you handling your finances? Are you serious about getting out of debt and being able to have some leeway in your finances? Are you honoring your commitments? So God's asking you probably in this stage to tweak something, either relationally, professionally, or financially, and you know it. I don't even have to tell you what it is. He's been nudging you, and you thought, I didn't know that was God. What if it is? What if it is? Take that step. You know, take him fishing. It's where it gets really interesting. Take that one step of faith to see, you know, if God comes through there, instead of doing things the way you normally do it, let's do it, you know, my way this time, Jesus says. And I don't know what it means for you. I know you don't fish at noon. I know that, you know, 35 and single, you can't afford to be off the market for a while. I know that you've been, you know, with only one company for, you know, you've only been with the company for a year. I know they're your only friends, and if you dropped them, you would never have any other friends. Nobody would ever invite you out to go do something. Look, I know that there's a lot of different ways that this could be applied, but Jesus is asking you, would you trust me on this? Would you tweak this for me a little bit? So leave your, take him fishing. And then the last one is leave your nets. Leave your nets. This might be the stage that you're at. At this point, it is the all in. At this point, it is the he's the Lord of all. I didn't make him Lord of all. You can't make Jesus Lord of all. He already is. Save yourself the effort. So, but this is where you wake up to it and you say, wait, you are Lord. You own 100% of my money, not 10%. You own 7 days of the week, not one day. You are God. And at that point, you're saying, you take everything. Your life just becomes an open hand. You go, you know what? I don't own this. This stuff is not mine. You can have it. And not only that, my stuff is yours, but also my heart is yours. I'm yours. It's a way of living your life. And by the way, it's a process. This is not, you don't start here. You know that story of Jen Douglas? She wouldn't tell you, I was hurting, and then one day I was just like Jesus. That's never happened to anybody. She would tell you, all the stories in this church would tell you, no, it's a process. I went through this, went through that, and that. And by the way, this is not baby faith and little toddler faith and grown-up adult faith. No, this is all the same faith. It's not about being a baby or being mature on this list. It's about, are you going to take the next step? Whatever the next step is, take it. Where are you? Maybe you're at Sit and Listen. Maybe you're at Alone in the Boat. Take him fishing where it gets exciting. Maybe you're at, hey, God, take everything. But whatever the next step is for you, take it. Take that next step. So it's not, where am I in this continuum? The question is, hey, am I following? Because whatever your next step is, the way you know you're following is if you take that step. What's your point of challenge in your life right now? That's where God wants to work. That's how God teaches us. That's how he taught Peter to trust, not Peter to trust. I don't know what that means. But that's how he taught Peter to trust. And that's how he teaches us to trust. That's how he teaches us that he's trustworthy. Maybe it's a small inconvenience. Maybe it's managing one area of your life differently. Maybe it's surrendering everything. But you don't want to live your life and wonder about this. Whatever your next step is, take it. Because you don't want to live, I promise you, if you follow Jesus, looking back on your life, I can't tell you how many times in my own life I looked back and I said, thank you, God, that I didn't do what I wanted to do, but I trusted your nudge in this direction. Follow Jesus. Whatever the next step is, take it. And you will never regret it. I promise.